They include Adirondack Beverages of Scotia, New York, makers of an assortment of naturally flavored soft drinks, the State University of New York at Albany, and the members and listeners of WAMC.
This program is a production of WAMC News and is made possible with funds provided by the State University of New York College at New Paltz. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly news magazine examining the activities of state government. Is political scientist and syndicated columnist, Dr. Alan Chartok of the State University.
In this edition, we'll look at two bones of contention between the governor and the legislature, energy and the Equal Rights Amendment. And we'll talk with Senator Douglas Barkley about his decision not to seek another term. The decision announced earlier this week by Senate Majority Leader Warren Anderson to keep the Senate in session until next week has left the door open for possible consideration of the State Equal Rights Amendment, a measure the Senate originally declined to bring up for a vote. Rick Lepkowski has the latest on that.
Majority senators have been placed between the proverbial rock and a hard place over the proposed state ERA. Governor Cuomo and women's organizations have snatched the amendment from ultimate death and have given it new life with a last-ditch but forceful lobbying effort. But to combat this, New York's Conservative Party reportedly has warned Republican senators if they vote on the ERA, they will lose the Conservative Party line, which many Republican senators feel is crucial to their re-election bids. Although it was Governor Cuomo who reintroduced the ERA in his State of the State address in January, women's organizations accused the governor of not pushing hard enough for the amendment, like he did for the 21-year-old alcohol purchase age. The women's groups and Cuomo met, made amends, and together lodged a last-minute push to bring the legislation to the Senate floor for debate. The governor then met with Senate Majority Leader Warren Anderson, urging Anderson to allow debate on the ERA. Anderson, who says he favors the amendment, told the governor it was not him that was holding up debate, but other key senators in the Republican conference. The Senate Majority Leader then gave the governor permission to lobby those senators. At a press conference following the meeting with Anderson, the governor cited a recent Marist College poll that showed an overwhelming number of New Yorkers support the ERA, and he warned the senators that the people of New York are watching.
Now, 73 or so percent of the people want the ERA. I'm sure that's true. I will tell you myself, that is not the ultimate criterion, nor should it be, and I'm sure it's not for any of the people in this group. We don't do things by polls. It is interesting to know that so many people favor at least a discussion of this issue, and I think it's relevant. I wouldn't want you to get the feeling that I or any of us, I think, if I'm free to speak for them, are saying every time you get a majority view in a poll, then that ought to be the law. We're not saying that at all. But it is relevant. Certainly, if you're going to make this a political argument, certainly if you're a Republican senator who is thinking about how it's going to cut politically, it's relevant to know that while that conservative leader may be telling you your line is in trouble, you better remember that there are a whole lot of voters out there saying your life as a senator may be in trouble.
Women's groups are echoing the governor's sentiments. They will blame the Senate majority if the ERA dies without debate. And Noreen Connell of the National Organization for Women says they are targeting opponent senators and going after them.
I think the Senate leadership is under the delusion that they can run away from issues of equality for women. And they can't. This issue is going to haunt them. They did not want the issue coming to the floor because they did not want a recorded vote. And we will hold them accountable for blocking the ERA, for holding it hostage. And I think that that will become very clear to them in the next couple of weeks.
Well, then, women's forces, will they try to target some of these senators then, do you think?
Yes, I can tell you that the National Organization for Women's local chapters have been holding rallies outside the offices of state senators. There was a rally in Utica outside of State Senator Donovan's office. In Poughkeepsie, a rally outside of Senator Rollinson's office. On Sunday and Monday in Nassau, we had an ERA rally, and on Monday in New York City, we had a picket line outside of Anderson's office, and then there's going to be pickets outside of the offices of state senators in Rochester, Buffalo, and Syracuse. And also there's been some activity in Albany itself.
So, when last week it was believed that the state equal rights amendment had been put to a quiet death, it now has new life. The question remains, however, is there still time? Governor Cuomo admits he may have been slow in his lobbying push for the ERA, but he maintains there is still another week for the Senate to debate the issue.
So of course there's a chance. We're here because there's a chance. What you need to do, you need to get the conference, or a sufficient number of them, and we're not talking about a lot of people, to change their minds and go to Warren and say, hey, maybe we're right. Maybe the governor did fail to make this clear. You know, he was distracted by national ambition. But now that he's come back to earth and explained to us what the situation, now we understand. So blame the governor for the tardiness and let's get it done. I'll accept that.
Conservatives, however, disagree with the governor. Serfin Maltese of the New York State Conservative Party denies his party is putting any pressure on Republican senators to leave the ERA in limbo. And he believes the decision already made by the Senate's Republican Conference is final. As far as Maltese is concerned, the proposed state equal rights amendment is dead.
Our position is that it should not be reinterred. There was no real call or hue and cry for it other than the governor proposing it. And the governor now mischaracterizing this as some sort of a pressure tactic is a lot of bunk.
So you're denying that the Conservative Party is making any lobbying effort whatsoever.
At this point in time, from the state level, that's absolutely true. There is no lobbying effort going on. If there were, it would be coming out of the state headquarters, and it's simply not. We regard the Senate conference action as a final action on it, and despite what the governor may now talk about doing and what the pro-ERA forces up in Albany now are talking about doing, we don't see the Republican Senate majority changing their minds.
According to the state constitution, if the ERA is left to die this year, the first possible chance of it going before New York voters would be 1987. A proposed constitutional amendment needs approval of both houses of the legislature in two consecutive years. Only then would it be put before New York voters. But if the Senate does take up the measure and passes it, then both houses can debate the issue next year. And if it passes next year, a state ERA could go before New York voters in 1985. The chances of that happening, however, is very, very slim. In Albany, I'm Rick Lepkowski.
Energy legislation is another cause of friction between Governor Mario Cuomo and some members of the legislature. Bill Gralty prepared this report.
There are a number of major energy issues which have not been resolved, and barring a miracle finish, probably won't be until perhaps a special session late this year. Among the key issues is the Long Island Lighting Company and its unopened Shoreham nuclear power plant. Governor Cuomo is standing firm in his opposition to forcing the ratepayers to pick up the tab or allowing a state bailout of LILCO, and he chided Republicans for not acting.
They have a phase-in bill. They have a used-and-useful bill. What else do they want? They haven't thought of anything. Not a single line. Now, these are people who claim they could make a budget by themselves, right? Now, all of a sudden, they have no ideas on energy. What else do they want us to do? You know what they want us to do? They want to duck the hard questions.
But key figures in the Senate didn't think much of Cuomo's proposal to phase in plant costs over 10 years. Ray Hull is secretary to the Senate Energy Committee.
The Shoreham rate phase-in bill is you know, so simplistic. It's stuff that we discarded 2 years ago when discussing this issue. And we have been attempting to work on some of our own, but they'd be far more complex and probably more doable than one that he has suggested.
Another nuclear plant also figures in the dispute, Nine Mile Point 2. The plant is plagued with cost overruns, and the governor submitted legislation putting a $5.1 billion cap on costs. Hull says that cap is needless because the Public Service Commission is about to put its own cap on, and besides, he says, the legislature ought to stay out of it.
It is a very difficult task at best for the legislature to be setting numbers on a construction project, and I think that that's what the technical expertise at the PSC is there for, and we think that's best left to them.
Then there's reallocation of hydroelectric power. Unless the state devises a way of allocating the less expensive electricity, the courts may step in, and it is Governor Cuomo's contention that upstate interests must release some of that power voluntarily or face losing much of it to downstate customers.
Here, now they're beginning to speak out against my proposal. See, the upstaters are getting conned, frankly, by a lot of people who are saying, hey, look, you shouldn't give up a vote. 67% of the ratepayers are downstate. I say that Warren Anderson is asking them to gamble. And I say every day the odds are getting worse. Why won't they come forward with an alternative? They're afraid to tell their people the truth, which is that they're in danger of getting badly hurt, and maybe they ought to give up a few votes to protect against that.
So Cuomo asked the legislature to approve an electrical allocation authority, a watered-down version of a previous proposal. But the bill did not specify allocation targets. Again, Ray Hull.
Well, that is an irony in and of itself. I received that bill late, Tuesday afternoon, read it with absolute horror in the sense that it's a pure power authority piece in the sense that it establishes only the bare bones of an allocation authority and then does nothing else. It essentially hands a blank check to the power authority. I mean, it was, in all senses, almost laughable kind of thing in the way it was handled. Then I go home, and I'm sitting there watching the governor on the call-in show on Channel 17 Tuesday evening, and I hear him say for all everyone in the listening to hear that he opposed from the very beginning the RREA proposal by John Dyson, and that it just wasn't something he could go along with. Yet that very afternoon he had handed up a bill which was, well, you can't even quantify how much worse than the original RREA. At least the original RREA had some exact and specific allocation direction to it. This thing was a wide open blank check. I mean, we have to really wonder if the man is reading this stuff, that obviously the power authority must be submitting to him, because we can't imagine who else would be writing this stuff, giving the power authority such broad and direct powers.
So there are many areas of disagreement, and both sides are saying the other is guilty of ducking the issue and failing to take the lead.
Yes, I guess the irony of the whole thing is that, yes, that they're sending them down so late when they're things that we've all talked about and thought about literally months, if not years ago. There's an irony to that we see and can certainly appreciate. But as far as the urgency of the problem, of course there's an urgency to it. We are grinding towards the end of the session here. But on the other hand, the leadership we've all been waiting for just hasn't materialized in any way on paper anyway.
Do you think anything substantive is going to happen before adjournment?
Probably not. Although anything's possible, I would say that there some of the ancillary issues might be considered. But that the major pieces, the hydro and so on, would probably remain for a later special session.
Ray Hull, Secretary to the Senate Energy Committee. In Albany, I'm Bill Gralty.
And now, a man for whom it is never water over the dam. That dynamo himself, Fred Dicker of the New York Post.
Ah, the wonders of state government. In the past few weeks, we've seen lawmakers reject a safety proposal which enjoyed the widespread support of the public, and then turn around and endorse another plan which appears to have hardly any support at all. It's a strange process that goes on in Albany, and it's often the perception of action, rather than the substance of the action itself, which is of greatest importance to lawmakers. 2 weeks ago, the state legislature turned thumbs down on a proposal raising to 21 the age requirement to purchase alcohol, an effort to cut down the inordinately high rate of drunk driving fatalities among young men and women. So what, many lawmakers said, if public opinion polls repeatedly show New Yorkers favor the higher drinking age? We know what's best, they argued. After all, if a 20-year-old can join the army and fight for his or her country, let him drink. And of course, If the legislators protect the liquor industry, local taverns, and mom-and-pop liquor stores in the process, so much the better. But then this week we saw the double take. The legislature made national headlines as it moved ahead with a plan to impose the nation's first mandatory seatbelt law on all New York drivers, no matter what their age. The arguments for the buckle-up legislation were much the same as those for the 21-year-old drinking age. The common good will be served through the saving of lives and a reduction in accident-related medical costs. However, in spite of the logic, it took Assembly Speaker Stanley Fink a good bit of arm-twisting to line up the votes needed to get the measure approved in the Assembly. I got 100 phone calls on this issue, Troy Assemblyman Neil Kelleher said shortly before the vote, and 99 of them were against this measure. Thus, Kelleher, a Republican, voted against the seatbelt bill. But this coming week, the bill is expected to clear the Senate, and then it's on to Governor Cuomo for almost certain approval. What happened? Well, it appears lawmakers, now in their final days of one of the least productive legislative sessions in memory, started getting nervous after their vote on the 21-year-old drinking age. They didn't want to leave Albany with the image of having failed to act on the problem of carnage on the highways. That's why they came up with a bill the public appears not to like. After all, it was the best substitute they could find to the higher drinking age. But all this begs the following question. Is the mandatory seatbelt measure a good piece of legislation? Ironically, it appears to be a whole lot better than the higher drinking age, notwithstanding public sentiment. Convincing statistics presented by the sponsors of the legislation suggest the lives of several hundred New Yorkers will be saved each year by requiring the use of seatbelts. The best figure the proponents of the higher drinking age could come up with was about 70 lives a year saved. Well, the lesson to be learned here is this. Many good things get done at the Capitol, but often for the worst of reasons. Trying to keep my eye on the ball at the Capitol, this is Fred Dicker of the New York Post.
There was an announcement this week which surprised some people. Republican Senator Douglas Barkley of Pulaski announced he would not run for another term. Not only is Senator Barkley well-respected, but he was considered by many to be the likely successor to Republican leader Warren Anderson when Anderson retires. But last week, Anderson said he would run again. And this week, Senator Barkley said he would not. Senator, why are you deciding now to leave the Senate?
Well, I've been in the Senate for 20 years, and I think I've had some accomplishments, had some disappointments. But at 51 years of age, I decided that I have to look at where I'm going and what I'm going to be doing in the future. And hence, since I think I've done a credible job, I decided that it was time for me to practice more law and for to get into other interests, which I've been interested in for a number of years. And hence, I made the decision to step down.
Senator, what are some of those interests?
Well, I'm involved in the private sector substantially. I have a number of clients that I can represent in the future. I'm involved with a number of board of directors of corporations, and there's a lot of opportunity, and to a degree I'm a venture capitalist, and I would like to pursue some of those interests.
You're the conference chairman here in the Senate, and a lot of people saw you as the absolute heir apparent to Warren Anderson at the point at which he would step down. Don't you think you're foregoing the chance to be majority leader of the state Senate?
Well, firstly, it's an academic and moot question because Senator Anderson has been and will continue to be a great majority leader. And so really, you're sort of whistling in the wind in the sense of saying that perhaps you could be.
Senator, what is your proudest achievement in the state Senate?
Well, that's a difficult question because there have been a number of things. I think that I'm very pleased I got elected the first time and thereafter, which makes you feel good in the sense that people have confidence in you. Carried a lot of different kinds of legislation, from housing legislation. I sponsored and created with Governor Rockefeller, the Urban Development Corporation, which has had its ups and downs, but it also has built a lot of housing. It's done a lot of other interesting situations, from Roosevelt Island to a shopping mall in Ogdensburg, to new cities at Amherst, and outside of Syracuse or Radisson. That was a very interesting situation. I did the decriminalization of the marijuana laws, but I also did the Rockefeller drug laws. So I've had a number of different interesting statewide statutes passed. And now, of course, I'm working on court reorganization, which may or may not go. But I have not counted it up, but I would dare say that we have had signed into law between 600 and 700 bills, which cover the spectrum of local situations to statewide implications.
Senator, who would be the next logical person who would chair the Republican Party conference here after your departure?
I really have no idea.
Is that an important task, sitting in there and making and chairing those meetings?
Yes and no. It's important in the sense that you get into heated types of situations, and I think you have to know those senators well enough so that you can move the conference in a direction and have it come up with a decision when necessary, and you also have to know when the conference ought not to come up with a decision.
I speak to you as the chairman of the Republican conference, but I think a lot of us want to know whether there's democracy within inside these conferences, whether the leader sort of lets out the line, or whether people really can disagree and come up with independent thinking aside from leadership.
I can assure you they can come up with independent thinking, and independent thinking is expressed on every issue.
Is there a specific bill you'd point to recently that would show that, the ERA, for example?
Well, what you have to understand in this kind of a situation is that you've got to have a majority, and that majority has to lead, and that you have to come to decisions and make decisions.
Okay, so then an issue like whether or not the Equal Rights Amendment, which you guys are under some heat on now, comes up for a vote, would, assuming that the conference takes a vote, then that's the line, right? I mean, what you're trying to tell me is that there is some discipline within a conference.
Oh, there's got to be discipline. And if you don't have discipline, you're going to have anarchy. And you couldn't get anything done. Now, in regard to ERA, if anyone listened to me carefully as chairman of the conference, what we did with ERA is have a long, interesting discussion on the issue and never put it to a vote, nor did we decide not to take it up again. We decided to do nothing at this particular moment.
You're an immensely popular person in this legislature. Since you've announced this, you've had calls from the vice president, all kinds of people. Why? I mean, I know state senators are important, but why is the vice president of the United States calling you up?
Well, obviously, that's a very happy occasion for me, and certainly I'm very grateful that he did call. You have a lot of friends in this business, and when you're in it for 20 years or so, you develop those friends. And they work in peculiar ways, and they know an awful lot of people. And in turn, your name comes up in certain areas, and certain things happen. So the good part about it is that when people ask me why they're asking me why I'm getting out, making a decision, why are you getting out, instead of asking you, why don't you get out? So, in a sense, that makes me feel good, because I could foresee a time where everybody says, well, it's about time that he moves along. And fortunately, I'm doing it at the point where they're saying that, well, why are you doing it? And I'm giving my reasons, which I think are valid ones. And it's a good feeling, instead of having to say, well, you know, they're going to have to take him out in a box.
Senator Douglas Barkley, How do his colleagues feel about his decision? We spoke with Senator Charles Cook.
Well, the first thing I make for it is that it's a tragedy for the state of New York, because Doug has been, as chairman of judiciary and as a senator at large, a very, very valuable part of New York state government. And I think that all of us who are his closer friends feel very badly that he's leaving. The significance in terms of the future of the Senate, of course, means that there will be a number of changes in the leadership structure, because there will now be two major committees open next year, and probably a good bit of reshuffling of the leadership.
Who will accede to the conference chairmanship in the Republican conference?
I don't have the slightest idea who would take that over. That would be a matter that would be decided when all the committee chairmanships are in place, and there's some matter of sort of constructing a leadership team. I think we're probably looking for a day not too far distant when Senator Anderson will no longer be running for re-election to the Senate. And I think that we're probably going to go into a transition phase where many of the people, newer members, are going to be starting to move into the sort of inner circle, including chairman of the conference.
Senator Charles Cook. You have to be of the legislature to understand what the announcement by Senator Douglas Barkley that he would not stand for re-election meant in a generally boring, slow Capitol this week. We're talking major bombshell. The 51-year-old Barkley, a widely respected Republican leader and a very wealthy man, is moving on to other things. Reportedly, a major investment opportunity. That is a real loss for the Senate, since Barkley is bright, temperate, and sure of himself. In short, he has always been one of the class acts of the party and of the legislature itself. But when a cataclysmic event of this type occurs either in the Kremlin or in the legislature, all the professional gossips and watchers begin to examine the implications. Here, then, are some of the possible reasons Barkley has decided not to stick around. The first of these is that Warren Anderson, the present majority leader, did not retire this year. The second is that it is unclear who will accede to the top leadership post when Anderson does retire. Speculators are now giving the nod to the Poughkeepsie Republican Senator Jay Rollison, who, like Barkley, is bright and articulate, but who has a few other advantages. Barkley is from the North Country, but Rollison is from the Mid-Hudson Valley, which is far more central to the rest of the state and his fellow Republicans than Barkley's district. Barkley is not only chairman of the Judiciary Committee, but is also chairman of the Republican Conference, or in layman's terms, the caucus. This gives him a key voice in decision-making on the major issues. But Rollison, well, Rollison had something else going. He's the chairman of the Republican Campaign Committee. He's the guy who channels the money to support senatorial races. Now, you all remember, rule number one in politics is to get elected and then reelected. The man who gives out the money is in a position to influence all that. One has to look no further than to Warren Anderson to understand the principle. The majority leader was the head of the campaign committee before he became the leader. And so, the winds of change are blowing in the legislature. Many of the Republican majority, like Anderson, W.T. Smith, John Markey, and Martin Knorr, are known to be getting on. So the Republicans will have to prepare a transition, which will allow them to retain control of their House and to elect substitutes for the retiring senators if and when they do retire. That planning has to be done now. Now is the time the Republicans have to plan so that when change does occur, they'll be ready. Their choice of a leadership team is as important as anything they will do this year. And if it's Jay Rollison that's to be the leader, now that Doug Barkley has taken himself out, the Republicans will be in good hands. But this legislature and the Republican Party are going to be a lot poorer with the disappearance of Senator Doug Barkley. That's our show for this week. Join us again next week for another look at state government. Bill Gralty edits and produces this program. Rick Lepkowski is the associate editor. We had help this week from Gene Powell. Please address comments and questions to us at WAMC Box 13000, Albany, New York, 12212. I'm Alan Chartock.
The Legislative Gazette is produced by WAMC News. Alan Chartock is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds from the State University of New York College at New Paltz.